Hey, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about How to Live by Judith Valente. Sophie, this one hit me in a way I did not expect from a book with that title. What's the actual promise here?
Hey there, Sam. So the subtitle is basically that the map to a meaningful life has been right in front of us the whole time, just written in the natural world instead of in a doctrine. Valente takes one element of creation per chapter, soil, water, sky, animals, and uses each one as a lens for a spiritual practice. It's a field guide to the soul, where the field is literally the world around you.
Right? And she starts with soil, which I love because it's so unglamorous. She says we're always trying to rise, to ascend, to become more pure. And the soil just sits there and receives.
Exactly. And she grounds it in that seed image. A seed has to fall into the ground and die before it can bear fruit. The soil doesn't strive. It holds the rain. It welcomes the seed. It gives a home to the worm. So humility isn't self-deprecation. It's just an honest grounding in who we actually are.
That reframe got me, honestly. I always heard humility as like, think less of yourself. And she's saying no. It's just knowing you're a creature made of dust who depends on forces bigger than you. That's not small. That's just true.
And then she moves to water, which is the adaptability chapter. Water can be a river, a still pond, a mist, or a block of ice. It's always itself, but it's always changing shape. Her point is that surrender isn't passivity. It's a dynamic trust in the process.
Wait, hang on, because I pushed back on this when I first read it. I was like, so we're supposed to just go with the flow and never damn anything? That feels like it could slide into just letting life happen to you.
And I think her answer is that clinging to a fixed idea of how your life should unfold is the thing that actually hurts you. Water doesn't lose its nature when it gets poured into a new channel. It's the willingness to be shaped by your circumstances while staying essentially yourself.
Okay, that lands better. Then she gets to the sky. And this is where she talks about the weather of the inner life. Some days are bright. Some days are dark and turbulent. And she says you can't demand constant sunshine.
Right. And she ties it to the dark night of the soul. The tradition has always known that dryness and doubt are part of the path. The clouds aren't the sky. Your feelings and your anxieties aren't the core of who you are. They're passing weather on a much bigger, clearer sky.
That's such a good image, because it doesn't tell you the storm isn't real. It just tells you the storm isn't the whole story. Then she gets to the animals, and this is the part one thing most people will love.
The bird is presence. It doesn't ruminate on the past or worry about next week. It sings, it builds its nest, it finds its food, moment by moment. She basically says mindfulness is just being as present as a bird on a branch.
And the ant is community. Ants work for the whole colony without any ego about status or recognition. They just do their part. She uses that to push back on our culture of individual achievement, which, yeah, and I felt seen.
Then the dog, which is my favorite chapter. A dog doesn't hold a grudge, doesn't judge, greets you with pure joy no matter what kind of day you've had. Valente says that's a living icon of grace.
Oh, I love that. And she makes the point that receiving that kind of love is actually hard for us because we're so used to a transactional world. Everything is earned, and the dog just hands it to you for free.
Which is exactly how she frames grace. It's not earned, not deserved, not conditional. And the dog shows you both sides of it, how to receive that love and how to offer it to other people.
So far, this sounds really gentle and lovely, but she doesn't skip the hard stuff, right? There's a chapter on suffering that I was not expecting.
No, and I respect her for it. The natural world isn't a sentimental paradise. A flower blooms and then wilts. A deer gets caught by a wolf. A tree gets struck by lightning. She looks right at it.
And her move is that suffering isn't evidence that God is absent or cruel. It's part of the cycle of creation and renewal. The death of the old makes room for the new. She even says the cross is a tree of suffering that becomes a tree of life.
and she calls the practice lament. Honestly, facing your grief instead of skipping past it. She says that's not a lack of faith, it's a necessary part of it. Feeling the full weight of your sorrow makes you more human, and it opens you to a deeper joy.
That's the part that got me, because I think we're trained to rush past grief. Like, okay, I've been sad for a week, time to move on. And she's saying no, sit in it. That's the soil new life grows from.
Right. And then she ties in Sabbath in a way that's really practical. She says it's not just a religious rule, it's a biological and ecological necessity. The land itself needs to lie fallow. Your body needs rest. Your soul needs stillness.
Which connects to her chapter on enough. She says the natural world runs on sufficiency, not scarcity. A tree doesn't try to be a better tree. A flower doesn't compare itself to the flower next to it. It just blooms.
And contentment, in her framing, isn't settling for less. It's recognizing you already have what you need. She says the kingdom of God isn't some distant future reward. It's a present reality, hidden in plain sight. A sunset, the taste of bread, the warmth of a friend's hand.
You know what this reminds me of? Last week when I tried that thing with my mornings, just sitting outside with coffee for 10 minutes before touching my phone. It was weirdly hard and then weirdly good. This book is basically that feeling stretched into a whole philosophy.
Yes, and she'd say that's attentive waiting. It's not passive. It's an active, open posture of the heart. Sitting in a garden, watching a spider spin its web, listening to the wind in the trees, without needing to do or achieve or even understand anything.
And she says the natural world is constantly speaking, but we're too busy talking to hear it. Which, ouch, but fair.
She also has this chapter on time that I think will hit people hard.
So patience, in her framing, isn't just about waiting. It's about trusting that things are unfolding in their own time, and that slow growth is often the deepest kind.
And the book ends where it has to end, which is on our relationship with the Creator. She argues you can't really love God if you don't love the world God made. To walk through a forest with reverence is a prayer. To tend a garden is worship.
That's the incarnational turn, right? It's a faith that takes the body and the earth seriously as vessels of the sacred, not just an abstract, otherworldly thing.
Exactly. She's pulling from the Bible, the Desert Fathers and Mothers, Mary Oliver, Wendell Berry, Thomas Merton. But she never lets it float off into abstraction. Everything gets grounded back in something you can see or touch.
Okay, so what's your one-line version of this book? Because I've been trying to compress it all week, and I keep failing.
I'd say it's this. The art of living isn't a formula to master, it's a presence to cultivate. The wisdom you're looking for isn't on a distant mountain, it's in the soil under your feet. You just have to slow down enough to notice.
Yeah, my actual takeaway is smaller than that. I'm gonna go sit outside for 10 minutes a day and just watch something that isn't a screen. That's it. That's the whole plan.
And honestly, if you want to go deeper, the whole library is over at 7minutebooks.com/app. There are over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language, and it starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access. The whole point of How to Live is that the sacred isn't somewhere else. It's right here, in the turning of the leaves and the patience of the soil. We'll see you in the next one.